So we're happy to have Karol Kozlowski from Coiner Mile Lyon, who will talk about the Asmertis bootstrap in front of Fundamentals.
Thank you very much. Let me also thank the organizers for having set up this event, the invitation and possibility to speak about this idea. So what I will aim to do over the next hour is to review one possible approach in low dimensions to constructing certain specific class of quantum field theories called integrable through what one could call the S-matrix program. So in the talk, what I will try to show you is the basis of the construction, what are typically the kind of objects which are involved in the construction, what are maybe a few techniques one can use in the constructions, and what are the existing results in so far, and what are the open questions. Is it working? No.
So let's make sure we're going to make those.
Okay. So let me start by discussing the overall setting, and since I will focus on this particular model later on. So what one wants to do, one wants to start from some classical partial differential equation, nonlinear one. So here I focus on the Synch-Gordon equation, which is known to be integrable in 1 + 1 dimensions. For me, the space-time variables will live in R11 when signature 1 - 1. So here I recall the Minkowski norm of the vector. And then what one wants to do is to find some way to quantize the this wave equation. So lift phi into some object big phi, which would take functions in say the Schwarz space on R11 and produce operators unbounded on some Hilbert space. And more generally, one wants to do it for other classical expressions like exponential of the field, or maybe this exponential preceded by a certain amount of finite order derivatives, space-time derivatives of the field, and lift them to some operators on this space, again, distribution there. So in fact, those are not per se the quantities which one wants to study in the theory. Those which are of main interest to the physics of these quantum field theories are the correlation functions. So correlation functions would be, you take some of the object you manage to quantize in this way, you take a product of them, evaluated at some functions f1, fk, and you average them in the vacuum. And actually, so this is a distribution, so you can represent it in terms of its generalized function symbol integrated versus those products of those fk's. And typically, the objects which would be measured in experiments are those correlation functions, those generalized correlation functions. So one path to there's one way to construct this field theory, which is proposed by Wichmann. So the idea is to turn the thing a bit upside down and to say, well, let's suppose we have some generalized functions w of one variable to two space-time variables up to infinity, which satisfy a certain number of properties, which I will not detail here, which are compatible with the presence of symmetry and other properties, and also which are compatible with the presence of causality in the theory, in particular local commutativity is states that such functions, when you exchange two space-time variables which are neighboring and which have a negative different Minkowski norm insert and insert plus one, if all this list of properties is satisfied by your family of functions, generalized functions, then you're automatically guaranteed the existence of a certain limit space and this capital phi object, such that the correlation functions you would compute for this you'd find in the sense of generalized functions would exactly coincide with the W case. So this leads to a way, alternative way to construct the quantum field theory by just constructing those generalized functions, and a bit allows one to remove a bit this whole operator setting in the construction and still focus on the most important objects, which are the correlation functions. Okay, so first steps to compute such Weismann functions were done within the form of path integration. And you can see it as some form of algorithm which allows you to compute the perturbative expansions of those Weismann functions in theories which can be seen as perturbations of free theories. It was developed by many people. And then, well, there were many mathematical imprecisions in this construction. So this led to the development of constructive quantum field theory, first which was formulated in the Euclidean setting because it was easier to set up certain justification of certain bounds and existence of per se limits. And basically within that setting, what one was able to do is to produce a certain say finite volume regularizations and taking the finite volume limits to infinity, other maybe other regularizations to infinity, which were producing correlation functions as such, which were then good candidates to produce the Weismann functions by first checking that they satisfy certain amounts of properties, which are called the Osterwalder-Schrader axiom. And this was basically guaranteeing that one was constructing some quantum field theory in this way. There are alternative characterizations of measures mu, which would lead to producing such correlation functions, first to stochastic quantization, and also with many people involved in the development. And also in this one plus one dimensional settings, through the use of Gaussian multiplicative chaos, which produces some maybe rather explicitly controlled expression for the measure. In particular, within this approach, it was possible to produce correlations of certain conformal field theories, but also of the Sinch-Gordon model, which I've shown before, in finite form. And as I said, well, one checks that such objects constructed in this way, so such distributions satisfy a certain set of axioms, which are also about the Schrader axioms, and then this produces the quantum field theory as before. But so those are existence results. But one would like to go beyond that and to have a much better understanding of these correlation functions, simply because the ultimate goal is to produce objects which are fully controlled, so and which one can then describe good enough to compare with measurable data. So this whole structure works quite well in the perturbative regime. And comparison with experiments works quite well, but going beyond the perturbative regime is more complicated, at least in the terms of precise controls on the probabilities. In one plus one dimensions, what one expects is that there is a universal behavior in the short distance regime of such correlation functions. It will possibly go up with a certain scaling dimension delta, which depends on the operators you put in the correlation function. And then there will be some term which is independent of the scaling parameter delta, which depends on all the indices of these operators whose correlation function one computes. And the expectation is that this should be a correlation function of actually a theory which is invariant in the conformal transformation, so a conformal field theory. Then immediately the question which I would like to answer is what kind of conformal field theory there is. If one is able to identify the conformal field theory which captures the UV regime of a given quantum field theory, which CFT correlators would grab a given correlator on the QFT side, what would be the formula for the scaling dimensions? And one way to be able to address this to very specific theories is to take the integrable paths based on the S-matrix program, which I will explain now.
So, sorry, could you explain what the alpha is and why the details are depending on alpha k?
Yes, so the alpha k, in principle, you can consider correlation functions of many operators. So here, for instance, you could take the correlation functions of the field operators, but you could consider correlation functions of quantizations of exponents of the fields or some descendants thereof, where you multiply the exponential by some products. And what I consider by alpha k is it's just indices which would, the choice of a given alpha k would choose what type of operators from whom you compute the correlation function. And then the scaling dimension of those delta of alpha k's, they in principle depend on the operators you take here. And this is something you would like also to determine. Okay, so the story of the bootstrap approach takes its roots in the early days of constructing quantum field theories, where people observed already that there were various divergences appearing in the construction. And the idea was that maybe let's try to describe the theory by only objects which are measurable eventually in experiments, and in particular the S matrix. Why? Because those objects should be, by construction, free of all possible divergences. And this was what was proposed by Wheeler and Heisenberg in the late 30s, mid 40s. There were various attempts to set up a theory of quantum field theory just based on the S matrix. Some progress was made. Some properties of these in S matrices were framed through formal perturbative expansions. But then the problem was that people did not manage really to find up enough to find up any viable S matrices which would then help to go push the thing further. And somehow then the whole activity of the S matrix approach was slowly dying out until in 76 Granik and Vergeles started to compute it order by order, I think order four, the S matrix of the Sinch-Gordon model, which I've shown you before, so the quantization of the PDE. And then they observed that actually they can reabsorb all the first fourth order of perturbation theory into one single expression, some scalar function, and that this function was actually satisfying other properties one would like to have for an S matrix, so unitarity and crossing symmetry. And then they argued that actually this S matrix should be really an exact formula for the Sinch-Gordon S matrix, and that scattering in the Sinch-Gordon model should be given when one has n-body scattering, should be given by a factorization of scatterings of just two particle processes, and the order in which one does this factorization should not matter. This idea was taken very quickly by Zamolodchikov and Karofsky-Toon, who managed to produce another explicit expression for an S matrix, this time for the Sinch-Gordon model. It was already a much more involved structure, basically because the particle content of that model was richer. In particular, this was argued that for such a more complicated model, the S matrix also has to satisfy what is called the Young-Baxter equation, which translates the fact that the order in which the scattering, two-body scattering, takes place doesn't matter. And then many people proposed to construct various other S matrices by solving the Young-Baxter equation. So then this led to the possibility to implement the S matrix program. And so the integrable bootstrap approach is consists in starting from the data S matrix of a given model. So this is, you can think of it as some object which solves unitarity, crossing, and the Young-Baxter equation, and from that constructing a Hilbert space and a set of quantum fields on that Hilbert space, which would then realize your theory. And this was this program was set forth by Karofsky Weiss and then Fedor Smirnov, who managed to eventually axiomatize all this this approach into a certain amount of equations, which I will write later on, which are supposed to fully characterize the operator content of your theory. Now, what does this approach eventually allows one to do? Well, it allows one in principle to compute explicitly, and I'll show examples later on, endpoint functions for the quantum field theory associated to that S matrix in Minkowski 1+1 dimensional space time. And also, because there is some integrability behind, it leads to the possibility to produce a certain amount of explicit conjectures, which were not proven so far, for some of the UV behavior of such theories. For instance, the results of Luciano around 2000, who predicted that the correlation functions of exponential fields in the short space-time distance between Tx going to zero blows up like this Minkowski space-time difference to some power minus 4 alpha squared, with an amplitude which is explicitly which is given explicitly in terms of the some integrals. There is also explicit conjectures relating applicable to much more general class of models, integrable models, which predict, which allow you to at least identify which conformal theory should grasp the unique behavior of which model, and what would be the tower of scaling dimensions possibly describing this behavior. And this was initiated by Samuel Logical and then developed by these people in particular. So
now in the remainder of the talk, I would like to
get a bit more into the detail of the construction and show you how it would work. So the starting point, and from now on, so I will just focus on the Sinch-Gordon quantum field theory because it is the simplest, it has the simplest non-trivial S matrix. To particle S matrix, and the Hilbert space is also the simplest one that one can think of. So that this allows to give the flavor of the construction without going to technicalities of it. So the stories, as I said, started with the work of Granik and Bergeles, who argued that actually the theory should contain one type of asymptotic particle, and that the starting point for describing the Hilbert space on which one would realize the Sinch-Gordon quantum fields can be given by a Fock space, direct sum of L squared spaces of ordered rapidities, which would describe these asymptotic states of those particles. So then, well, in that space, well, a vector will be given by its component in each of the Fock spaces, and you can think as the nth component as some incoming asymptotic and particle wave packet. So this theory has a purely diagonal scattering, and the scattering factor is just a scalar. If beta is the rapidity of two particles, it takes the difference of rapidities of two particles to take this explicit form. So this is the form which was originally recognized by Granik and Bergeles to cause all the perturbation calculation. And there is a parameter little b, which is a rewriting of the original coupling constants appearing in the classical Sinch-Gordon PDE, which takes value between 0 and 1/2 when g ranges from 0 to +∞. So once one has the Hilbert space, now I will introduce the operators which can act on this Hilbert space. So the first operator one wants to have, because it's a one wants eventually to build quantum field theory on this Hilbert space. So one wants to introduce operators which represent the basic Poincaré symmetry of your model. So let's start with the translation operator. So we take some space-time point y, and the action of the translation by y on the vector of the Hilbert space. It acts diagonally on each of the Fock space components by multiplying the nth component by a plane wave product of plane wave factors evaluated at one of the n rapidities. The plane wave factors involve Minkowski scalar product, which I recall here, between the space-time vector y and the bare and the momentum of the two momentum of the asymptotic particle. Here there arises the mass m of this asymptotic particle, and this is one of the parameters of the construction. So this is step one. Now, step two, how one would realize more general operators in the space, and in particular, field operators. So, so one can think of the field operator. It will act on a vector, and then it will produce something in the zero space component, n space component, and etc. And so, because it will, so for the moment, I'm not focusing on the distributional and the space-time variable nature of this operator. Just keep the space-time variable as it is. I will discuss that a bit later. So this O of X produces an n component by linearly acting on all the components at zero up to infinity, building up f, and taking this function as m, nth component in n square of Rm, and producing as a function in n square of Rm, and then summing up over all these contributions. Again, for the moment, let's not focus on any convergence problem, this construction here, or simply act on functions which have finitely many entries. Now, to have a realization of, say, Poincaré symmetry on the level of your field, one would ask that such x dependence of the field will be factorized by an adjoint action of the translation operator on some reference operator at a given point. And then the bootstrap program, what it does, so in order to construct the field operators, you need to, one needs to construct this all and every operator which map L square of Rn Rm to L square of Rn. And this is the heart of the bootstrap program, how to construct them as developed by these people. So how one does that? So let us first focus on the zero particle component. So the zero particle component is just linear form acting on a vector of your Hilbert space. It sums up all components of your vector f and maps them to scalars. Now, so basically one sums up linear forms on L square of Rm. So how one would represent them? Well, first of all, one could think of them as integral operators, which whose x dependence is already fixed by this joint action of the translation operator. So I have written it down here with this product of plane wave factors. They act on the function input function fm, and then one integrates with an integral kernel fm, which is actually one of the first postulates one would make in this construction. One wants this kernel to be a plus boundary value of a certain neuromorphic function in the variables beta 1 m even singly, which belongs to a physical strip where each of the imaginary parts of the beta ranges from 0 to 5. So it will be a neuromorphic function on this strip. And the reason one would take such a postulate stems from some perturbative calculations one can make in the SVH formalism, which basically dictates you do that. So because these are plus boundary values of neuromorphic functions, basically it means that this will produce, this integral kernel might be a generalized function, which would produce distributions of the type Dirac masses and principal values, the value generalized functions. Now, once one has set up the formula for the M, for the zeroth component, to set up all the other ones, well, one just generalizes this construction by adding up a dependence on the exit variable alpha n. So now the building blocks of the action, of the projection of the action of O of x on the n for space are these O and m's, and they act on function of on a square of Rm by adding up some products of plane wave factors, which against them just from this joint action of the translation operator, and a certain integral kernel, which again will be a generalized function issuing from certain boundary values of holomorphic functions in many variables. And that's it. So now, to characterize your operators on this space, within this formalism, what one needs to do, one needs to fix the generalized functions FM or beta MN plus delta values, and more generally, those integral schemes. And if one finds a way to set up those functions, then one has constructed the field operators for it. And the bootstrap program sets up a set of equations, axiomatizes a set of equations which are satisfied by those functions and which lead to their construction. So I will now list the axioms which one postulates that these integral kernels satisfy. And first of all, I focus on the simplest functions, fm of beta m, which are called form factors.
Carol?
Yes?
Is there some naive path integral which produces these form factors?
So these form factors...
These form factors would correspond to matrix elements of your operators between vacuum and asymptotic states, and if you can kind of formalize this matrix elements in terms of a path integral, then you produce those form factors. And actually, so this is a good question, because one could start from such a formal setup and then using a formal path integral justify that the axioms which I will write exist. But then one just turns the cards upside down and says, okay, so I start from the theory which has those axioms, and then I roll up the thing. So the first axiom is the rapidity exchange axioms. It tells you that if you take a form factor in n variables and you swap two neighboring rapidities, then you multiply this form factor by this S matrix, so that identifies the difference of the neighboring rapidities. So this is very closely related to the definition of the S matrix in your theory, up to some analytic continuations from the ingoing and outgoing states to all possible orderings of the rapidities. There is a second factor. There's a two other axioms, which are the monodromy and the kinematic ball axioms. They come together and they translate the fact that the theory is causal. So if one could kind of formally derive them by imposing certain causality, so commutativity of operators in space, like the local operators in space, like separations, and do some handlings, formal handlings to finally justify that such equation holds. So one equation is the monodromy. It tells you that you postulate that those FMs should be meromorphic in a certain strip, maybe with 2 pi in respect to each of the rapidities. And if you shift one rapidity by 2 pi, what you do, you move this rapidity to the other side and just to the end. And the third axiom is a kinematic ball axiom. So it tells you that those form factors, they have balls in the complex plane when two of their entries approach each other with distance I pi, and it gives you an explicit formula for the residue. So it relates form factor in n plus two variables to form factor in n variables. And finally, there is the boost axioms, which translates how operators transform themselves through Lorentz boosts, and it just produces overall shift in the rapidity, produces a prefactor which contains the spin of the operator times the magnitude of the boost. Okay, and then the idea is that those equations, first of all, they are not uniquely solvable. There are plenty of solutions to those equations. The solutions can grow with a certain power of e to the k beta. K can go from 0 to infinity when beta a goes to infinity. So they have an exponential growth in each of the betas. And the idea is that all mild growing solutions to those equations would lead you to the whole operator content of your theory. So one solution would, for instance, produce you the field operator, another one the exponential of the field, another one all these descendants, which I've shown you, and that's it. So now there is a very long history in devising solutions, which is already a bit astonishing. So this kind of axioms, they actually reduce the calculations of your form factors to solving this kind of Riemann Hilbert problem for the functions fn. And it turns out that this Riemann Hilbert problem can be solved explicitly, or at least one can produce numerous solutions of it in various forms as it was developed by all these people. Maybe I just show you one structural
form of solutions to which is the most efficient one. So the idea is to solve by steps. One looks for solution, one produces solutions FNs in the following form. First, one factors out a certain function of the difference of rapidities times another function Kn, which will be a certain transform of a simpler set of functions Pn of O. The role of this function F, which appears as a prefactor in a double ordered product. So first of all, it has an explicit expression in terms of certain long Fourier transform. And this function plays the role of solving the first axiom, so and the second axiom. It allows one to kill the presence of this S once one multiplies by this function. So it solves the S symmetry axiom and the 2i by monodromy axioms. So what it tells you is that the form factor has this prefactor here up to a symmetric and 2i by periodic function Kn of the n's. And then this Kn is a certain transform which I write here. So it has some one acts on the function P of the rapidity variables beta 1 to beta n and some auxiliary set of variables. Here they are discrete in the case of Sinch-Gordon model. They just run through 0, 1 to power n. And then there is an explicit kernel for this transform, whatever it is. And what this transform does is that it transforms the relatively complicated pole axiom of your form factor equation to some simpler set of equations for the Pn of O, which then you can, on which you can already attack the problem of solving and producing various solutions. And in particular, Barashnikov, Lukyanov, and Babuchan Karovsky, they produced this solution for the P function, which will be associated with the exponential of the field operator. Here, so you see this is a P function which does not depend on beta. It has a non-trivial dependence on the L's, which is of this form, and the Brahma the gamma, which appears e to the gamma phi, appears just in the exponent here with some normalization prefactor also being explicit in terms of the reparametrization of the model's problem. And so, again, the idea is that one has a system of equations for the PS, that we all write, and once you have plenty of solutions for the PNs, and all solutions of the PNs allow you to introduce all the operator content you would like to have. So
but after all, it's an linear solid by equations.
I don't know. I didn't ask my question, so so I've explained you how to construct the first kernel which was appearing in the linear forms using the zeros component of the action of the field, but then one needs to produce all the other components, those M's of alphas and betas. And then one postulates the fifth axiom of the bootstrap approach, which is the reduction civility axiom. So it's an axiom which allows you to start from one kernel M and M and move the first entry of the coordinate alpha N to the others one by one. But one has to specify in which space of generalized functions one wants to solve this equation. The details, and basically what it tells you is that you can move one of the coordinates of alpha n to the other side, so reducing basically the number of coordinates in the outer variables, plus adding up some terms which involve Dirac masses, products of S matrices, and matrices and kernels involving less variables, again in the outer variable in the inner variable on which one integrates. So actually, this recursive relatability, you can think of it as really a way to rewrite just the LSZ reduction on the level of these matrix elements, on the level of these integral kernels, and you just take it as a starting postulate of yours. And you couple it to the initialization axiom Namely, that when you have you don't have any more any alphas in the integral kernel, then you just produce the form factors which were already constructed. So it's a well, first of all, one has to massage it a bit to see that it's a well-defined distribution of induction, in particular, because you see that there are presence of direct masses here. And moreover, because you move some of the alpha rapidities to the other side, shifting them by I pi. And because you have a pole at two coinciding rapidities, which differ by I pi, in some sense has to be given to it, but this can be done. And the bottom line is that this is a well-posed distribution of induction, which you can solve in a combinatorial form. First solutions were given by Kirillov-Smirnov, but Simon would have a bit systematized this construction. And basically now this closes the first step of the construction because it produces an explicit realization of the fields as certain operators and elsewhere on this Fock sphere. Good. So once you have this, and there's some way to identify which solution gives you which operator, one can attack the problem of computing correlation functions in this approach. Yes?
Can you set of solution that you have are one-to-one correspondence with a field of the
Not in the general case. I think in some cases it could have been done for other integrable quantum field theories, which reduce to minimal models. In some cases, it was done, but in general, this is absolutely an open problem.
And because this means that there are some magical accents, that's what some
And also, yes, or some sort of. Deformation of it should be seen, and this should pop up in the UV limit of the theory. But so far this is not known in general, maybe in just some simple techniques. Already actually classifying all solutions to the bootstrap equations or to the P function is also still an open question. So going back to correlation functions, now understand the so far actually the construction of the operators one could just keep the space-time index as it was, we're still making sense, provided one had some sufficiently regular functions which have maybe finitely many components. But if one wants to compute correlation functions, one really has to go to the distributional nature of the operators. So one sees this symbol O of X of some generalized operator valued function. And then to set up the calculation of correlation functions first for well-defined operators, I will introduce projection operators which project the Hilbert space to the half Fock space component of it. And I will introduce truncated smeared operators which are just projection of a field operator smeared by G. And consider first the regularized correlation functions which are just products of such projected operators, and such objects can be well defined through the procedure, and in principle, by summing over all values of the projection indices, so through all of nk minus one, one in principle would get the correlation function. So how does the calculation goes for just the simplest possible two-point function? So if one takes two test functions whose supports are mutually space-like and computes this correlation function first of the projected operator, the operator O1 is just projected on the zero space because of the presence of the vacuum state, and the operator O2 is projected on the N space, then it is a generalized function of variables x and y integrated versus f, and informally, so this generalized function is this matrix element. To make sense of this matrix element, one really needs to build on the distributional nature because it allows one to regularize the multiple integral I write below just by going to the definition of how such operators are. So how this would go? Well, I have just a product of two operators. Think of them as integral operators. This one connects zero particle space, n particle space, and then we go from n particle space to zero space. So this is the product of those two integral versions. That phase factor, which was appearing previously, which I spit out explicitly. And then by symmetrizing the integral and deforming it to some integral over the real axis shifted by pi over 2, depending on the sign of spacetime parameter x, and doing some Bruce transformation, this two-point function is written as a, this time, well-defined convergent n-fold integral involving a product of two form factors and an exponentially decaying factor when the speed of the decay controlled by the spacetime difference x, t, and zero. And this chain of transformation is justified by recalling that this is all of this should be taken at the sense of this. And this distributional interpretation allows one in particular to, because you see those integrals a priori, they will grow up like e to the l theta k. And this is an oscillatory factor, so those integrals per se are not convergent, but if you understand them appropriately at certain boundary values, they become strongly convergent. Now, so as I said, the true correlation function is then recovered by summing it up over n. So considering such a sum, each sum is an n-fold integral, which after massaging a bit with the formula I've shown you, it takes the following form. So one integrates over Rn. There's a one body confining potential decaying exponentially fast. There's a two body interaction, whose form I have plotted here, which has an explicit Fourier integral presentation. And there's a many body interaction coming from this Kn transform. And if one wants to make sense of this two-point function, then one needs to estimate how this kind of integrals grow with n. So this can be done actually. The problem in this form has a sort of a structural similarity with some n-fold integrals, which arise in the non-trivial part of the partition function of permission, or more generally better ensembles. And using some refinement of concentration of measure techniques, one is able to provide an estimate of the n-fold integral building the previous series up to some hypothesis on the growth of the solutions Pn, which are natural from the point of view of the bootstrap construction. And basically, the sum of this two-point function in the nth particle sector decays almost like a Gaussian. So the first thing one needs to say is that the control of the remainder here in the upper bound is not uniform in the space-like separation between the variables. And this is, it should be so, because one expects that in the short distance regime, short space-like regime, so the regime, there's a certain blow up of the point functions. So this should stem from the fact that the series is to be convergent. The decay is, of course, slightly sub-Gaussian. So the fact that there is a 1 over n factorial doesn't change anything in convergence. And this kind of bounds, and it explains why, at least on numerical level, people were observing that such for factor series, you could just take a few of them, and this was already giving a very nice description of the triple functions. Now, in order to build a theory, well, as I said in the beginning, one needs to construct not only two-point functions, but actually the whole tower of multi-point functions. And this was already much less studied in the literature. There were some partial results where some pieces of the summons which would build three and four-point functions were obtained by these people, but nothing systematic. And then with Simon, we attacked the problem of computing those regularized projected multi-point functions, and we managed to produce some closed expressions for them. So if we focus on test functions which whose supports are all purely space-like separated, then actually the projected The k-point correlation functions of projected operators can be written in this form, where the w r's are well-defined Bonafide functions, so they don't need to be taken in the distributional sense, but only for such hypotheses on the support of the test functions. And I want to show you just a glimpse of the kind of formula, explicit formula one obtains. It will be a generalization of the formula which appears for the two-point functions. So for that, I need to introduce some notations. If I have two sets of vectors, one n-dimensional and then one m-dimensional, you can concatenate them and produce an m plus n-dimensional vector. If you have a vector, you can reflect it and take its coordinates in the opposite sense. And then finally, the form factors, they were satisfying this asymmetry when one was exchanging two neighboring variables. So one can introduce general factors which allow you to swap two concatenation of vectors in a form factor, and this produces a sort of generalized S factors which you can compute explicitly if one wants to. And finally, I denote the macroscopic momentum associated to a vector gamma as the sum of two momenta which are the coordinates of a vector gamma, and the uniform vector with just one entries by E. And I do not write the dimensionality of the form factors here. It is just implied by the arguments of the form factors. Then the closed expressions of the form factor for the one and k point functions takes the following form. So it's an explicit multiple integral representation, or actually sum over various multiple integrals over contours, which are, so first of all, one sums over integration in respect to various variables gamma VA of various numbers, which one all gathers in a single vector n. There is some constraint on the entries of this vector n depending on the regularization parameters RP, which were the juicer. Then there is a product of plane wave factors, a bit like in the two-point function, a product S of gamma, which involves just products of these exchange S functions, which I introduced before. And then an ordered product of form factors, which couple in a different way the various gamma variables on which one integrates over a certain contour, which is explicit. It's a slight shift of the real axis by some slightly displaced imaginary parameters. So that's it. This gives the closed formula for the k-point function. And then in principle, one can get the k-point function just by summing over the regularization parameters. And assuming that everything is convergent, then this produces such a closed form series of multiple integral representation for k-point functions. But the convergence is a problem. So in principle, the techniques used for the convergence of two-point functions could be applicable here. But as I said, for two-point functions, there's a refinement of concentration of measure techniques arising in random matrix theory. But those concentration of measure techniques in random matrix theory, they are based on the real variable setting. And actually, it was a bit lucky that the two-point function case was a real variable setting. But this is a genuinely complex value integral. And you want to study how the sum of those embedded integrals grows when the number of each of the integral of the dimensionality of each of the gamma VAs grows to infinity. So for this, one needs to develop a concentration of measure techniques for complex valued integrants to control how it grows with n. So a first step in this direction was taken in my work with Alice Vianel and Alexander Little, where we managed to set up the concentration of measure techniques to describe the large number of integration behavior of beta ensembles in the presence of complex value potential. And this is the first step, but there's still a few steps to overcome to be able to attack these kinds of integrals. And then maybe let me come to the last point, which is the checking of the Weichmann axiom. Because so far what one does is that one develops some axiomatic framework which produces few operators, actually to check that those operators satisfy all the operator properties, and in particular you characterize their domains as extremely complicated from the formula. But what one can do, one can compute the correlation functions and just check that they satisfy the Weichmann axioms, and then this guarantees you that all this construction gives rise to a quantum. And actually, the way the Weidman axiom, the bootstrap axioms are written now, most of the Weidman axioms are really built in and easy to check on the expressions we obtained for the multipoint functions. The only one which is actually quite difficult to check is the local commutator. This step in this direction were taken by Kirillov and Smirnov already in the late 80s, where they managed to prove something like a weak local commutativity by assuming that they could multiply the operators in the commutator, and that all series involved in this product were well defined. They could show that if one takes two smooth and compactly supported functions, then the commutator vanished. So their proof was just checking the algebraic annihilation of all terms. And actually, with the concentration of measure techniques, which work for the convergence of two-point functions, this can apply to this result, and it gives such a weak local commutativity. But this is not enough to prove local commutativity of the Weidman functions, because in that case, one would need to remove the compactly supported hypothesis. And what we managed to do with Simon is to prove the start from the hypothesis that the series for multiple functions are convergent, something which should be proven familiarity. But if this is true, then the multipoint k-point functions which characterize, say, the product of field operator, they will satisfy all the Weidman axioms, in particular, this local commutativity axiom, which is the hardest to prove. So this says that if one takes two test functions which are space-like separated, then one can swap the field operators in this correlation functions, and thus up to the convergence hypothesis for multipoint functions with the number of points bigger or equal to 3. This shows that this bootstrap construction, at least for some Schrödinger model, it gives rise to a quantum field theory. Now, what can be said beyond the Sinch golden model, and what are the other challenges of this approach? Well, actually, so as I said, the S matrix within the bootstrap approach is sort of as a solution to the Young-Baxter equation. This Young-Baxter equation, it takes its roots in representation theory of quantum groups, and using this representation theory, one can build a lot of solutions to the Young-Baxter equation. Each solution, provided it also satisfies unitarity and process, will produce you a viable candidate for an S matrix of an integrable quantum field theory. Of course, one should then identify which integrable quantum field theory, say by going to the semi-classical limit, but in particular, it's known for sine Gordon model of other field theories. And from the S matrix, one can deduce the particle content of the theory, or if you want, the structure of what Hilbert space you should put as a Fock space on which you would build the operators. And then once you know that, there are techniques. Again, building a representation theory of quantum groups and the so-called off-shell Bethe ansatz, which allow you to produce form factors. So analogs of the form factors I showed before, which will then allow you to produce closed expression for the field operators. And then the open problems in the field. Well, it's definitely already for the Sinch-Gordon model to prove the convergence of series described in multipoint functions. Then actually, because the only case where multipoint functions were computed is the Sinch-Gordon model case to produce some expressions for multipoint functions in the more complex model, at least in the Sinch-Gordon model, to see how it works. This is technically a bit more involved because combinatorics involved in the computation of multipoint functions become much more complicated due to the fact that the Sinch-Gordon theory has a much more complicated particle structure. And what, then what is interesting is that this kind of integrable the description of the quantum field theories, they provide you closed expressions for the two-point functions. Once they are closed, you can think of attacking the problem of short distance asymptotic analysis and extracting this UV behavior out of the closed formula. So far, this is still the techniques to be able to do so are in this infancy, but in certain cases it's possible to do it. For instance, in the Sinch-Gordon model, there is the free fermion point. In the free fermion point, the two-point function reduced to a Fredholm determinant, which is actually of integral operator time. And for those Fredholm determinants, you have some dependence in the integral kernel of this Fredholm determinants on the short UV distance R, and you can analyze the asymptotics of this Fredholm determinant using some Riemann-Hilbert technique and the pseudolinear space descent. But this is just the case of the free fermion point. But away from the free fermion point, You do not have any more reduction to the frequency dependent, and something else has to be invented. And what would be also extremely interesting is to be able to set up a bridge between this bootstrap construction, which just starts from S matrix and some postulates, some axioms on how this S matrix allows you to build the field operators, and connect it with more traditional constructions of quantum field theory through constructed path integrals or through Gaussian. And so I stop here.
Can you get the field equation in this topology?
Yes, so for Singe Gordon, you can get something like you would start from a P function, which is supposed to describe you the field operator, and you would get something like the quantized version of this golden equation, where you would have the D'Alembertian acting on the field operator times a term which you built up from operators which built the exponential of the field and e to the minus exponential of the field, and all this holds in the weak sense. And then you have a small kind of dressing of the mass parameter which appears in the equation, which appears explicitly there. And you can get it also in the sign quantum case.
Any other questions?
The axiom that you wrote there generalized to include the for non local operator, the for operator which are non local with respect to the subtotal states. Can you look for the commutativity? Can be said as model to improve your reading relation for the operator?
This I don't know, because like the simplest case where this would appear would be the sign Gordon model, I think, for exponentials of the field, and then there, well, there proving local commutativity is still very very combinatorial, so it's still an open question, I think. Or some modification of this local commutativity to encompass for the tail of the operand.
Are there any developments on the idea that form factors are like generalizations of conformal blocks? Limit when the graphites go to infinity, they should
not. I think it is so. There should be some relation between conformal blocks and form factors, because the form factors know something about the UV limit of the theory, but this would not be so just the limit beta goes to infinity of the form factors. It should be some resummation of a whole tower of form factors. And altogether, they should go to the conformal blocks. But this has not been so much explored.
On the other hand, on the side of conformal blocks, sometimes there is a kind of clear uniformation of conformal blocks.
Mm-hmm.
Look at the Liouville conformal blocks, for example. They are given by some, given by the sums of the partitions or the Young diagrams. So those have a straightforward uniformation, which is motivated by connections to gauge theory. Do you know of any meaning of this uniformed conformal blocks in the massive integrable theory?
No.
Yeah, so what do you get on the level? Do you get something on the level of operators, like self adjointness? Or maybe do you get that the exponential of the field is actually the exponential of the. Like,
Yes. So you can so for instance, in Singe Gordon, you show that the field operator is self adjoint, and that the exponential of gamma the field, its gamma derivative, is the field, and you can get this for also various other models. So you can get such kinds of relations. So crossing symmetry on the level of Singe Gordon model, the particle is its own antiparticle, so it's just some relation for the S matrix. It would be maybe more seeable for sign Gordon model where there are solitons anti solitons.
It's a relation kind of a process.
No. Monodromy is really something that enforces that is enforced by causality of your theorem.
So let's do one particle factor. There would be one factor if there is possibility.
Yes, because it's some form of annihilation pole of particle with antiparticle. So maybe the name bootstrap will come from the fact that you have that the N plus two residues reduce to residue of a form factor with N plus two reduces to a form factor of N, and that you what you do, you actually solve this residue equation backwards. You solve first for two particles, then you deduce the general form for four, and you go up. That would be the idea of the bootstrap. So and indeed those are annihilation poles of particles with antiparticle.
Sure, you can run into all kinds of trouble that looks like that yesterday when there's a lack of factorization of quantity. Is it purely agnostic to this, or is it something that get out
So for the Sinch-Gordon models, such problems I don't think would appear. They would probably appear if you would consider more complicated S matrices. So for instance, things could happen if you would even consider Sinch-Gordon, but with what is called CDD factors, which would dress the S matrix. This could cause various kinds of problems because it could cause problems of blow up at too strong blow up at infinity of your form factors, which you cannot then regularize properly using distributional nature, and then you have to do something else. So
But most they are very closely related.
things like
What's they have.
Yes, but they will probably be related to two theories which have like more which have bound states which can be formed in different ways, and then coherence of all that may be.
There is something in your assumption that the assumptions are sort of clear, but they throw out the complication.
I think those complications would come if you start to put you look at the, you start from a class of S matrices which have several poles in the physical strip, so it will have bound states, and then the Hilbert space is more complicated and it allows for more volume of complications somehow.
Are there perspectives of building that kind of?
Yes. So if I would state it for Sine-Gordon, it would have all these aspects, but it's much more heavier to state.
Well, what kind of theories can this be imagined to be developed for, say, a nonlinear sigma model? Is that completely out of reach or?
The general class of theories I wouldn't be able to tell. Is it like for all theories which would be whose S matrix would solve the Young-Baxter equation, in principle one could develop all of this because the role is settled. So I think you would have some solutions which would correspond to something like
So
the
you
ON
need like a
model.
classical system that already has the expected.
So
So
because
like the nonlinear sigma model classically wouldn't have a mass, right? Quantum mechanically it should. So that this wouldn't possibly be applicable. Right? But Sinch-Gordon is classically there's a mass. That's better.
I'm not sure it would be applicable to nonlinear sigma models.
No, for
that's
N
never
models,
never
it's
Henderson. Analysis.
For N one for all N one, that's the
For
buzzer.
the
That's
Wiegmann.
it's
The big difference is that this model is not CP. Well, but apart from this, the fact that classically they didn't have a mass, even though together, yeah, doesn't
Okay, so that doesn't matter. Is that classically? I'm just wondering if it matters that classically one is very different from the other.
Doesn't matter. Just assume that you have a
subjective
thing. Try to consider this.
Okay, I suggest that we continue discussion in a short break. Thank you.
You need your